Welcome to today's podcast. Our aim is to highlight work being done with Diaspora and Africa Wales Connections, and is a collaboration between Hub Cymru Africa, Sub-Saharan Advisory Panel, and Africa Welsh News. Let me introduce Asimbi Sebegeni.
Hello everyone, thank you for joining us today on the Wales Africa podcast. We have with us Yvonne Adukwe. We have a lovely session for you where we learn more about autism and we learn more about her passion for it. So I'll just hand over to Madame Yvonne Adukwe.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I've heard of all the good stuff you guys do. My name is Yvonne. I run the Autism Hidden Voices charity group. As the name says, we focus on families that have children or even adults with the autism diagnosis. We try to support them, signpost them to special services that would help them. We also guide them and we act like handholders and mentors because of the barriers and the stigma in the community about autism as a whole.
I think what's really interesting is to know that they are change makers in our community, doing such phenomenal work on conditions like autism that are very underspoken, especially in the Wales Africa community and beyond. There's a lot of work that needs to be done and there's a change in narrative that needs to happen. It would be important for people to know what exactly is autism. It would be good to get a brief description from you on what this entails.
It's one of those things where I don't think there's one definition because you see the scientists say their own. Yeah. We parents have our own definition. Technically, in a nutshell, it is a social and a communication disorder, kind of like disconnect. I prefer to use the word disconnect than disorder because it's not like there's anything broken. It's just there's no connect between the person and the usual social norms, you know, in the society. And that's the way I would best describe it. Autism is very bespoke, so there's no one size fits all, even though we've got the list of tick boxing that you tick. Oh, they don't make eye contact, they flap and things like that. However, when you meet an autistic person, you only meet one autistic person, and they differ even within a family where you've got multiple children with autism. Each child presents differently. So you have to literally look at that child and what they present and then help that child. So that's the general diagnosis or the way to go about it. However, in reality, it doesn't work that way. And I think when we talk about society is, you know, everyone has a way of doing things. If you don't do things that way, then it becomes a problem. You have to identify what is a problem for you, and if you know how to go about it, you know, go around it. What people don't know is scary. What you don't know is fear. And what you don't know, once you don't know something about it, the fear, it's very easy for you to label that thing as so many things because you don't want to deal with it. And that's where this stigma really comes from. The society that doesn't understand what this is, the best way to deal with it is just label it with black magic or something very disorganized so that it becomes a definition for them that they are okay with, if that makes sense. So we don't know what this is. So obviously we've had people attribute autism to witchcraft and all sorts of spiritual issues or something that someone did to someone, if we're talking about it from the African ideology and stuff like that, you know. But it's just a case of education is needed. Once you get the education, then you figure out how to go around it. And once you get to that mindset, it's easy to just go from there. I'm not saying it's not hard work, it is, but it's better than being in the fear and not doing anything.
Awesome. No, I think that's such a great definition and description of what the challenges are with autism, as well as defining it. I think the next question would be, what is the story and vision behind Autism Hidden Voices?
It's funny. Autism Hidden Voices, I keep telling people, it created itself. I didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to create an organization. Not at all. And funny, I'm one of those people that I think over the years of working with other charities, although I kind of like disillusioned with what charities are on about, because they say one thing, they do one thing, and they do something else. You know, Autism Hidden Voices came from my story. You know, I have an autistic child. Well, she's an adult now, a daughter. My journey with her in navigating the system, getting help for her. Now, I'm talking about the help that she needs, the basic help. I'm not even talking about the extras. It's a fight. The system is built in such a way that you've literally got to fight for everything. First of all, you must have the knowledge then to fight for the system and navigate the system. It is so hard. So it's been from the moment I had her, I've had to fight for school placement, help needs, literally everything, in addition to trying to understand and take care of her. And I think what happened is because I was helping her, other people are like, oh, how did you do this? Help. So I help one person, that person brings four, the four go, they bring five. And then I just found myself, people coming to me having to ask questions, because I think there are two things here. One, you've done it, so you have the knowledge. Two, that's my sister, someone like us. The identification that somebody like them was able to do this, there's that safety and that reassurance. Let me talk to my sister, because she would be able to tell me what I want to know. In the way, because it's not telling, it's how to tell it. You know, anybody can rock up to Citizens Bureau or any of the agencies and ask for help, but they are coming from the ethical side of things. There's a way and manner. I think the delivery is different from them and from someone who comes to me, because I know where you're coming from, so I can adapt to telling it to you or helping you in the way that is comfortable for you and is easy for you to understand as well, without having to speak all the big languages and, you know, things like that. People feel very comfortable. And I looked around, there are a lot of autism organizations. Don't get me wrong, there are so many, and they are good at their job. Well, some are, not all of them. But there isn't any, I just realized there aren't organizations where you can go that actually understands from the culture, the reason why the fear is there, to put you at ease so that you can start to have those conversations of changing your mindset about how you need to move forward with your child. And that is very important, because if you're coming from a place where the culture is, you can't talk about autism, God forbid, you don't need to say that. Oh, how dare you? And again, you're so isolated. How are you going to listen to people that are telling you, okay, yeah, rock up to this meeting, come here, we'll give you the information. Most of the information is in English, in words that they don't even know because they lack the knowledge. How does it help them? So people go to these places, they get the information. Nobody breaks down the information for them. So what do they do? They just put it aside and then just stay there in their isolation and not even move an inch. So that is needed. And because of that, I was like, okay, now I've got so many people calling me on my phone. This needs a group. Because at least with a group, it makes it easy, you know, and hence why Autism Hidden Voices got created, you know.
Wow, no, that's so inspirational. I think it shows that there are many who are helpless.
Yeah.
And that helplessness is through lack of awareness. And definitely, you even spoke of how there's a two-sidedness to this information. There's a side of being in a foreign land, but with understandings from back home, and someone needs to be able to bridge that gap, be able to be here, but able to take them back home in thought process, in analysis. And I think that's so powerful. The other question we wanted to talk about today was, can you share the top barriers and problems faced by the autistic community in Wales, if there are any that come to mind? Yeah.
Oh, there are many. For the purpose of this podcast, I'm going to use the word mainstream and community, because I think that's the best way for me to differentiate it. I don't want to say ethnic and I don't want to say foreign. So I think if I use mainstream, we're talking about everybody but the community and then the community. Now, having an autistic child in the mainstream community is hard. Because you've got to do, you know, there's the benefits side of it. There's the special needs education side of it. You've got to deal with the therapist and all. It's hard enough being in that environment. Now, bring in the community. you now have triple barriers to it. Yeah, the barriers fit, like I said, with the mainstream, you know, it's hard enough because you've got to navigate, the school. Now, let's put it this way. The system is split into two. Health is to do with the doctors, the therapies and all that. That's one section. Then you've got the school, which is different. And you have to navigate these two systems independently. They are not even interlinked. Whilst going through the everyday issues with the child. Now, they tell you if there's information. There isn't much information. A lot of people are given scripts that they read out. These scripts are not updated, you know. And at the end of the day, it's not static. These children are growing, okay? Everybody has children. As they grow up, by the time they get to puberty, hormones and all that, all these things don't factor in all that. What is the information? How important is the information for me as at today, as at now, with where my child is at? So that's a very big disconnect. Back to the community. What are the barriers? First of all, the major one, stigma, that fear. I have this child. What is wrong with my child? What is this? They don't know. And then you've got family members. Again, everybody being in fear. So everyone surrounding you is in fear. What's the first thing that normally happens when people are afraid? They need to blame something. Who will they blame? The mom. Oh, it must have been something you did while you were pregnant. So you've got this lady. I'm going to focus on the ladies now. With all this blame game going on due to fear. Most of the cultural communities are men-oriented. So nobody's going to talk to the man. And if the man doesn't want to deal with the fact that they have this child, they walk away. There are a lot of single families now because the men don't want to deal with it. Self-denial. The fear comes, then the self-denial. This is not my child. Then the shame. Then the finger pointing. So in just one point I've given you, you can see the sub points that come under stigma and fear. So that's the first one. And then the second one, when they now overcome that and they go to the environment. With the child, you have to adjust the environment for the child, not the child for the environment, which is hard. You go to the park, your child is going to display certain behaviors. Are you bold enough to stay there and see it out? No, you want to run and hide because you're embarrassed by your child's behavior. The environment is not even friendly for your child because when the child is not behaving, you'll be thrown out. No one has time to understand what your child is going through. The child is not acting the way they should be. You'll be kicked out of the bus or the shop or anything. So you've got to deal with that. So as a parent, you have to be 10 steps ahead of life, if that makes sense. You want to go out with your child tomorrow. You need to have started preparing that journey like 3 days before that day. Go ahead of time. If you're going to a venue, go ahead of the venue that you want to go to. Talk to them. Make provisions. If they can make provisions for you to bring your child. And that's about the only way you can actually get to do certain things. If they're not going to make the provision, then you have to find an alternative. And there isn't much availability. So these children are now left from, you know, they can't join activities, games. They can't integrate into society so well because society hasn't been adapted for these children. From the community side of the third one that is not in the mainstream is financial. A lot of people don't talk about it. The media don't talk about this. And this is the key point here. A lot of people have migrated to the UK. People don't realize that there are sections of which the migrants are placed in the UK. Now, anybody that comes, whether you come on a plane or you were one of the migrants that came off the boat, the minute you land in the UK, you are not entitled to UK benefits. Let's start from there. So once you get on that floor, once you land in this country, you have to work to put food on your table. It's only when you stayed here for years and you've gone through the system and they've agreed for you to now be resident here before we start talking about whether you're entitled to benefits. So a lot of these families have to work. They do 2-3 jobs in order to put food on the table. Where do they now have time to take those children out for therapy, sessions, after school activity? They're not there, which is one of the big problems the charities are facing. Their charities are like, oh, we want to help these families, but they don't come. Yeah, they won't come. They don't have anyone to leave the other children with to bring that child for the event. You know, I'll give you an example. I do family trips. they get to bring the whole family with them. Because if not, they'll have to pay babysitter to take care of their other children in order for those children. Most of the trips for neurodivergent or autism in children or adults, they want just the child and the parent or the child and the carer to come on it. What about the rest of the... They don't have the facilities to leave the children at home to go. So that's why they don't come forward for things like that. So with us, we've had to do it in such a way that we are focusing, we are not giving them that extra stress of thinking about bring the whole family. But what I would do sometimes is I will pay for the child. You now pay for the siblings you're bringing. And then you can all come. And actually they said this has been great for them because everywhere they want to attend all these trips, but they can't because they only want just the child and them. So you can see how we've managed to overcome that barrier. But we still have a long way to go. You know, so the three barriers, like I said, the fear, stigma, the lack of education and facilities, and then financial. That, in fact, the financial should be number one.
I think what's really stuck with me is the fact that a lot of people can actually take their family members with them for the sessions that you have, and leaving behind one costs the child with autism. That's so powerful. That's so profound. How important is it for minority communities in Wales to create a more inclusive space for persons or children with autism?
You come here, your kids are in school. You want them to be able to mix with children in school and have friends. I mean, that's life. But that's not happening. Everybody comes, like with the community, they want to stick to themselves, which is understandable. You wonder, it's what you know that you will go with. But it's very important because the key to a lot of the strategies that you need in helping your child to be inclusive in society is factored into you being able to get your child to mix or go for these things to enable the child to learn the different ways of maybe making friends. You know, and when you're making friends, you're not making friends with color. You're doing friends. Friends is friends. There's no, oh, just make friends with your people. No, you have to mix. First of all, you're in a foreign land. Let's start with that. You've come all the way to this place. So you need to be able to live with your neighbors and you want to be upstanding or outstanding human beings in the land that you live in. So integration is key. The best way for integration, when you come to a foreign land, let's go back to the community. Now, when you come to a place like the UK or America, wherever you are, the first place you go to find recognition is faith. Most communities are faith-based. The first place you go to is either the church, mosque, synagogue, wherever your religion is. That's actually the key place that the government actually needs to tap into. When you get there, these are the people that normally will help you, introduce you to other people in the community that are here to help you settle. They help you with, you know, finding someone that will help you with a house, tell you the lay of the land, what schools to go to. That's where the community actually starts. Now, if we can feed into these places, when someone comes in here, while they're helping you to settle with your house, job, getting a car and all, we're able to identify, oh, you've got a child that has needs. That's where they need to be picked up, there and then. But unfortunately, it's the opposite that happens. Because they get to these places, some of these places are not educated. They don't know what they're dealing with. Now, I'll talk about the church, even though I am working with the mosque as well now. But with the church, some of the churches actually tell those families, that's prevent them from getting help by telling them, oh, they need to pray for the child. Again, bringing their mentality onto that family. They've literally just made it even worse. So you see a family that have come here, they've got a kid who is maybe like 3 years old on the spectrum. Now with autism, early intervention is key. The sooner you start, the earlier you can be able to get that child to learn so much. Because they are young, the brain is young, very, you know, it absorbs a lot. But because of what they've been told, they hide the kid. They don't get the support. Even when support is being given to them, they refuse it. But don't forget, they refuse it because of what they've been told and the lack of knowledge. It's only when they now get to the point where they are desperate. The child is probably has been struck off school, having massive meltdowns and behaviors and all. Probably the police has been even involved. But then years have gone by. If you have autism, normally it's from the age of 2-3 years is when they give you the diagnosis. A lot of the community people that are coming to me are coming at the age of 12-14. They don't have a diagnosis. Where have you been? They've put them in mainstream school and then the school just pushes them along. Let's just carry you along and go. We'll manage the behavior. Because the school, two reasons. One, they can't do the parents' job for them. Some teachers will say, well, we've spoken to the parents, but they've not done anything. And there's not, their hands are tied. They can't do it. Or then some schools are like, oh, we can manage because they're getting the funding. So the school is benefiting from the funding, but then the child is losing out to the detriment of the child. So it's a bit of, there's so much going on there, which is why education is key. Because if the parents are educated, they have to realize that they need to take the power into their hands and dictate exactly where their child needs to go, what type of help their child needs. It has to come from the parent, which is why we fight all the time. Because when you know what your child needs and your rights, if you know what you know, 2 minutes in front of me, I already know whether you're up to speed or not. And you can't compare what you've read in a textbook to my lived experience. That is a massive difference. I've lived with this child day, night, 24/7. You've gone to school, you've read something, which, when was the last time autism training was updated? Years ago. So the professionals that are giving you this information are giving you outdated information.
How do we unlearn as a culture, as people who come from maybe backgrounds that are from Asia, Africa, Middle East? How do we unlearn these mindsets that someone who has autism or someone who has this kind of condition is a problem, is a challenge, is either the woman's fault, this child is in this position? How do we unlearn? Is there any work you do to support autism in the African community, on the continent as well?
Yeah, when we started the charity, obviously COVID happened. COVID opened that door. That you, in fact, COVID answered that question. I shouldn't be saying this, but COVID did a lot for us on the positive side of things, you know, which was networking online. That prevents us from having to get on the plane and go to Africa every time I need to say something. So we do workshops and we're able to, through social media, advertise what we wanted to do. And people were messaging me, oh, can I come? Like, it's Zoom, of course. You know, so we were lucky, we paid for the Zoom that would allow us to get as many people in. When COVID started, I started linking up with other organizations in other countries. And when we do our Zooms, we open it up to them as well. The good thing about the workshops is, like, I'm asking you, what is working over there? How do we apply it? Now, the beauty of the networking is we have organizations who are helping and we kind of tell them, okay, this is what you can do with the limited resources that you've got. It's amazing because the last workshop we had was with the UK police, the Nigerian police, myself, and some organizations in Nigeria. And we all had a workshop to talk about one thing, which is there are children on the spectrum that just elope. They can run off from the house. And the problem we have is that is they run to places like water or train tracks because they've seen it on their route all the time. So that's why when a child goes missing and the child is an autistic person, now if you know their file, if you know information about it, you already know their favorites. Straight away, they always tell you, once a child is missing, what's the nearest water around the area? And these kids, they go there and they jump into the water. You've not taught the child to swim. Most time they end up drowning. So we're having a lot of children that go through this means or they go on the train track. You know, there's work being done here in the UK, in America and everywhere. In Africa, we don't have that. We don't have those systems and all. But we've got one thing in Africa that is amazing. Like if we had it here, it'd be super. People power. In Africa, we are nosy as a nation. There's no child that'll be walking on the road. I will not call you. Come here. Where is your mother? Are you alone? It doesn't happen here. A child will be walking. People, you know, there's this sense of, oh, it's not my business. I don't want to get involved. And you watch the child go. Now, that's major because when we had that information, that workshop, they said, oh, the boy was found like 4 blocks away. And it was somebody who stopped the boy. Where are you going? Where are you coming from? And now took the child to the nearest police. The mom was in shock because the mom actually thought the boy was sleeping. didn't realize the boy was found and had been on at a police station for 4 days, and they were trying to figure out whose child is this. There isn't money to go on TV, so you know it takes a while. So for 4 days, this lady was, if she thought her son was dead. They are looking at ways and trying to imitate, okay, the ways here, would it work in Africa so that we could implement it? But what struck me, and I think I actually said this on that workshop to both continents, I said, I'm so pleased, even with the lack of resources and everything, the fact that both of us are having this conversation at the same time. I was pretty impressed that Africa had come up to that level. Because if we say we don't have the resources, we probably will still be thinking about the basic teachings, not coming up to this. So I was quite impressed with that. And now the knowledge is there in Africa, in Gambia, all these places. There are groups talking about it, but there's still a lot to be said. A group that I work with in Nigeria teaches drama. And at the end of the year, he puts up a show to show parents, your child is able. Look, don't look at the label, look at the able. He said to me, parents come to him to say, when you're announcing the child, please don't call their names, the second name, so that they are not identified as to who they are. That broke my heart. Because I want to shout from the rooftop that my child can do something despite the challenges. But for them, no. They still that the stigma is so great that, yeah, let's celebrate that child on the stage. But let's not say where the child, whose family the child is. We're talking about stigma. It's internalized. It's an individual thing, and it's also a national thing.
In Africa, people are so nosy.
Yeah.
And that's a fact, you know, there's that sense of community. There's that sense of, I'm my brother's keeper, I'm my sister's keeper. But I think very much so the downside of that is that there's this sense to impress. I want my child to really impress others. There's that sense of, you know, how do I look in community? How do I look? And I think that's the downside. Two of the Sustainable Development Goals touch on good health and well-being, as well as reduced inequalities. What does the future of autism awareness in Wales and Africa look like? And do you have any recommendations?
That question has been asked to me so many times. Let me rephrase the question. Someone said to me, where do I see autism in 5 years' time? And my answer is, I think autism needs its own community. So rather than integration, I think we need a disintegration, you know, push us to one corner. Because if the community, the systems that are in place and the community, the mainstream infrastructure is not friendly for us at all. It's not friendly to be able to incorporate our children. Then what's the point? We keep talking about inclusion, but then we're not accepted to go to certain places. We're not allowed to go certain places because we don't fit the norm, whatever norm is. Why not give us our space? Give us our own housing, give us our own shops, give us our own. And that's, if you look around, that's what's happening. You go to the cinema, they now have autism hours. So there's certain hours or certain days where autistic families can come to watch a film, which is good. However, the film, they keep showing us baby films. We've got adults as well. So why don't you show the normal films so that we've got a selection? So there's lack of selection in that. So they're doing a good thing, but then they've not finished doing the good thing. So we have to live with that. So I see the autism friendly, you know, cinema screenings and I'm like, ooh, lovely. And then I look at the films and there's nothing there for me to watch. Or I know that my child will like. So what's the point? You go to the parks, parents, the minute you walk in and you see people taking their children away from the park because, oh my God, we can't deal with that child. So when is inclusion ever going to happen? It's not. I don't see it happening because society is not accepting of these individuals. You're different, so something must be wrong with you. We say it, we only speak the speak, but we're not doing the doing. The action is not happening. So rather than waste everybody's time, I think we should have our own island. We should have our own space so that you leave the Mad Hatters to deal with it. But let's do our thing in our own way, you know, because I don't see how inclusion is going to happen. The shops, you have your child has a meltdown because they are trying to regulate their body, you know, or they don't understand the environment or they're overwhelmed. You'll be kicked out. Nobody's going to say, oh, bless you. Oh, he's having a meltdown, bless him. No, you need to leave because the safety, because every time it's always about the safety about other people around you. It's not about the safety of that person. It's about the safety. It even happens in schools. You drop your child in school, your child has a meltdown. I don't even think you get to the office. You'll be called back to come and pick your child. And what is the number one thing they tell you when you come to pick your child? Oh, for the safety of the other children in the classroom. Which really, yes, they have a point. Because when you have a meltdown, they don't know, they might kick off, throw chairs. Anything can happen. Yes, we understand that. But there should have been a place, if it's a school, which is why special schools are there. Now, don't forget with the stigma, we don't want our children to go to special schools because when we take our children to special schools, oh my God, the whole world will know that our children go to special school. Then they now know, oh, our child has a problem. It's all in your head. Your obligation right now, your focus should be on your child and not about what people are thinking. Half the time, they might not even be thinking it. It's you bringing those thoughts to yourself. Put them in a special school so that they can be given the tools, given everything to help them succeed in life. But no, they want them in the mainstream school. And then the question I always ask the parents, why do you want them in the mainstream school? They say, when they are around normal children, then they will be normal. That's the answer you get. Again, lack of knowledge. And I say to them, okay, that's fine. Are they there now? Yes, that's okay. Drive to the school during break time and park your car somewhere and just watch your child in that playground. Your child is in the playground, but your child is not playing with anybody. He's just standing there. People are playing around him, but not with him. And your heart will break. So you need to put your child in a place where the general understanding and the other children like you, then you can be able to understand. People will literally make the effort to come out and reach out to you and try and talk to you, play with you. In the mainstream school, the teachers, there's how many kids to take care of? Their hands are tied. So there are layers in everything. Like if we could talk forever about this, but it's every part of life, there are issues. So as long as you've got an autistic child or an adult, you need to be the doctor, the parent, the doctor, the health visitor, the therapist. You need to tweak the environment for your child in order to be able to have something of an integration, which is a lot. So you're going to spend 90% of your time doing all this. What time do you now have to work with your child and be a mother to your child? So I think personally, just disintegrate the whole system. Let's work with it the way we know how. And I think the same thing will apply in Africa as well. Then at least that way, those that don't want to deal with it can go their merry way, you know. Because if not, people in Africa, some people have died as a result of being isolated or cast out because you've got this child. I think when it comes to Africa, the mindset change needs to be massive. And that mindset change have to come from the leaders, which is why I talked about the church. If Africa wants to move forward with autism, it has to come from the church, the chiefs, the village chiefs, you know, the obas, the rulers, because we're a community that listens to our leaders. So the only way to change the community is if the leader says it will change. That education needs to continue. But again, I think similarly as well, because if the leaders can put in infrastructure and systems that will accommodate this, then we can see that change. But I think there's a lot more that needs to be done back home because of the mental change. Here, people are shouting off the rooftop that, oh, my child has autism. So yeah, people are talking. We don't have that hiding thing in the mainstream. What we're fighting for here is change the infrastructure, change the system to make it a little bit friendly for us, which of course comes down to politics and money.
Wow, no, thank you so much for taking us on this road to understand autism more and the work that you do with Autism Hidden Voices. I think the one thing we can take away is making our space more autism friendly and making our community more autism friendly wherever you are. Thank you so much, Yvonne Odukwe, for your time, and we hope you enjoyed the session.
Thank you for listening. If you've been affected or would like to know more on this subject, you can contact Yvonne Odukwe on autismshiddenvoices.com. And if you have a story to tell, please contact Hub Cymru Africa or myself, Glenn Edwards, on glenn.photo@gmail.com. We'll be happy to hear from you. Thank you.